Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast, episode 23. I am your co-host, Jason Snell, and across the internet for me, as always, your host from The Hollywood Reporter, chief TV critic, Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hey, Jason. We needed a huge applause button. I don't want to go anywhere where there's not like a huge applause button for me. Is that asking too much? I think I don't know.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
All right. Let's just... We'll
fix it. We'll fix it in post. We'll put in a laugh track.
I would love that. You just... Everything I say, you know what? We'll fix that in post.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Exactly. I'll just dice up past podcasts. It'll seem like it makes sense, but it doesn't really make sense.
Yes. It'll be an amalgamation of my own laughter. That would even be more chilling.
Well, Tim, as we record this on February 27th, you know, the first TV show that I can remember watching and loving was the original Star Trek, which I watched on Channel 2 from Oakland. Every day at 5 o'clock, a Star Trek episode. I can't, not only can I not remember discovering Star Trek, I can't remember not knowing every episode of Star Trek by heart, because I think I just watched that show every day. Monday through Friday, 5 o'clock on Channel 2 for the first, from when I was, I don't even know how young.
Yeah.
Leonard Nimoy died today. So that's very sad, because that is definitely a huge part of my formative years, was that for me, that was the TV show. That was for the first, 10, 15 years of my life. That was the TV show for me.
So that was your precursor to Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's right. I discovered Doctor Who much later. Uh-huh. And that is not the, it holds a very different place in my heart. I mean, the original Star Trek, just for me, that was, I played Captain Kirk on the playground in second grade. I mean, that was my thing.
Nice. Yeah,
absolutely. That was
what
we did.
So the nerd genes were like,
They were fired early. Absolutely.
Wow,
you could have guessed that. But yeah, absolutely. So it's sad, although...
It is sad, but he did live a great long life,
He did, and you get the sense he lived it to the fullest, and he had a really proper perspective, and he came to grips with his fame and didn't... I never felt like he pandered to people, nor did he try to push everything away. I think he just kind of came to accept that part of his life and appreciate it, and and did other stuff too. Directed some movies, did some guest star stuff. He was on Fringe the last couple of years as kind of a out of the box guest star. He was in those J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, which was actually, he was more than a cameo in the first one. He was like a pivotal part and kind of sent his character off, I think, in a way. And
absolutely.
Built a bridge to the new the movie actors that are playing those parts now. And I don't know. I think you would go – you'd be hard to find somebody who you could point to and say they got more out of life than somebody like Leonard Nimoy. That he seemed to – live life to its fullest and appreciate it and come to terms with all the good and the bad about, the journey he took and seemed pretty reasonable and well-balanced in the end. I don't know. I think that's just amazingly admirable that this is the life he led.
Well, that's also really hard for a lot of people to do. I mean, he's just so – once you get so known and typecast in many ways, but once you get so known for a role – and that role will follow you for the rest of your life. How do you come to accept that?
I was thinking about this. We were talking about shows going off the air, and obviously Parks and Recreation went off the air this week with a, I thought, really nice.
Yep, lovely.
It went out as nice as it was, which is it's a nice show where nice things happen to people, and it's not awful and anything like that. But I thought of that same thing, which is, all of those people, even though that show wasn't wildly popular or something, it's like that they were on this show for 7 years, a huge chunk of their professional life. I mean, listening to them talk about it, that being there for 7 years, obviously Chris Pratt is going to go on and be in a billion other things. But, some of those people, if not the majority of those people, that will be the highlight of their career. And the rest of their career might be interesting. But as I was watching their reunion thing that they did on Late Night with Seth Meyers, I was thinking, for some of these people, this is the height. And it's not that they won't have great lives, but this is going to be this is like the end of the thing that they'll be known for. And that's got to be a lot to come to terms with and accept, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the I mean, right? That's the deal you make when you when you're a character and you're a character actor and you become this character and you get known for it and you get famous. But a lot of people can escape theirs because they're just a character. But something like Spock is, you know, and Leonard Nimoy. And I mean, there's obviously there's tons of actors and a lot of actors have gone on to sort of shed their role. It was really, I mean, just to speak to terms of what actors go through, Edie Falco was talking at the last press tour in January that it took like two or three seasons of Nurse Jackie for people to start stop yelling Carmella to her on the out on the street. And then they would yell Jackie. And she's like, yeah, she goes, the first time that that happened, I was like, wow, okay, I turned a corner here. I'm not sure that ever happened for Gandolfini. Of course, he died as well. But, I mean, I don't think he ever really got away from the fact that people always saw him as Tony Soprano. And it's just really hard to get rid of those roles. But you're right. I think that Leonard Nimoy really sort of came to terms with it. He didn't you know, get angry about it. He didn't separate himself from. I think he, like you said, with the Star Wars movies, I thought he was
Star Trek.
It was Star Trek. Star Trek. Sorry, Star Wars.
You got to walk the walk. Now the nerds know you're not one of them. You're safe. Well, now.
No, actually, the funny part is I actually have seen all those. And when I was a kid, I did watch Star Trek. I didn't watch a whole lot of TV as a kid, which is strange. Yeah. But and just to reverse course on that,
a certain amount of TV after which you watch a certain number of hours, you die. So for you to be a TV critic, you had to have like a TV free period, or you'd be dead now. So.
Right. There would be a maximum capacity. Uh-huh. Yes. I'm as I said at the press tour, I'm at capacity.
Yeah,
can't
unsafe.
Have this.
Above this point, it's just unsafe. You can't.
Oh yeah, and my mom. I remember my mom used to get a huge kick out of the fact that I, for many years, thought it was called Star Trek.
Oh yeah, that was a common thing. We all thought
I was like,
it was
let's watch Star Trek. You know,
yeah,
that was
sure.
what I was all
Trek
about.
Trek is
that.
An obscure
what,
word. Nobody knows what that
knew
word
what
is.
Trek was. I don't know what the hell a Trek was.
Exactly right.
So, but no, in the. In the Star Trek movies, I think that J.J. Abrams did a great job working with him, transitioning that character. And he also was really good on Fringe, which is a way to like pay homage to the fact that he is a sci-fi guy. And there's a lot of weirdness on that show. He kind of fit in perfectly there. I liked
it. And that was one of those, like Bill Murray being revealed as the mayor on Parks and Recreation, that was one of those roles that was just always in the background, spoken of, but never seen. And so in Fringe, after like 4 years or whatever, when it pops up and it's Leonard Nimoy, and you're like, oh my God, that's crazy. Like, that was a really cool moment. You know, you talk about people who are living down roles. I was thinking with the Oscars in the last week, Neil Patrick Harris is one of those people who he managed to get out from under Doogie Howser, right? And it took him a long time and another long-running show and a whole bunch of other stuff. But it's nice when people get out from under it. And if you don't, it doesn't say anything about your talent. I mean, I don't know if Nick Offerman is ever going to be ever have anything better than Ron Swanson, right?
Right.
But
I mean,
he's
a great character.
But he seems to have accepted Ron Swanson and come to terms with Ron Swanson, and it's like a part of him. And that I think that's all you can do, because in the end, if you become otherwise, you're going to just be bitter and miserable about the fact that nobody will ever let you forget that you were in this thing, and that's no way to live. So
I want a Ron Swanson show.
Oh man, wouldn't that be something?
I don't know why. I just want it. Yeah. Want to have it. It's just a little talking about breakfast foods and meat.
Yeah.
And social graces. It'd be awesome.
I got four words for you. The Ron Swanson mysteries. Huh?
So it's a spoof on detectives?
Yeah, except he's out in the we learned in the Parks and Rec finale that he now like is going to manage a national park.
Right.
So I think it's going to be like wildlife crimes, like camping crimes and like cattle rustling and stuff like that, and Ron Swanson will take care of it. He'll solve
it. Okay, you have your thinking cap on, cuz I wasn't going there.
Wildlife crimes. And he'll do some woodworking on the side. And it'll be
absolutely.
Thing.
You gotta make a canoe here and there.
Yeah, the mystery of the purloined park bench.
That's tremendous.
Next,
yes, exactly.
On Ron Swanson mysteries. You wrote a review. There's some new stuff coming out that you've seen. There's some new stuff coming out that you haven't seen. We should probably start with the things you have seen, like Last Man on Earth. We talked about that a couple of times. And this is Will Forte, right?
Yeah, and it's one of the things that The Last Man on Earth is one of those things where I was a little reserved about, like, I just wanted to see more, and I wanted to, because early on I just thought, I had just seen like the cut down, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. I hope it holds up. And then, you know, per how I work, I put it off for as long as I could, and then got to it. But recently,
I like how you say that as it's part of your process.
It's part of the process. Yeah, I'm just going to forget it if I don't. In fact, I actually watched it earlier than I probably would have watched it normally, knowing that it wasn't going to go in the magazine. It was going to go online only. But anybody who follows me on Twitter saw the hints coming out the last few days about how great I thought it was, and then. So my review went up today, and I love it. And I will have to say that, like, I decided that I was going to be as bold as I felt I could be, because I saw three episodes, and each one of them is fantastic. And the two that will be comprise the pilot for the 2 half-hour episodes that will air Sunday. And everybody should watch them. I mean, they are so great. They are so great. I mean, the series may go and change its direction down the line, but this start is amazing. And I could watch the first. Well, I mean, the third episode was great too. I could watch the first two episodes like just on a loop. It's that good, and just done really well. And so my review today that I posted today was like, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen something where I thought, wow, this is pretty groundbreaking. I've not seen something like this on television. And that's just, I mean, whether you're subverting a genre or you know, you're flipping things around, and everybody does that. And it, but you know, this is, I mean, the premise is, you know, it's right there in the title. His character is literally, his character named Phil Miller, which is an amalgamation of the directors and executive producers Chris Miller and Phil Lord, who did the Lego Movie and 22 Jump Street, all that stuff. What is it? So Miller and Lord,
yeah.
Which was funny. I had a whole thing with them today, but their vision of what this would be, what would it look like? The Last Man on Earth. We have all kinds of examples of this in the sci-fi world in a drama, and the simplicity of this series is that they just, well, I mean, Will Forte came up with the idea, so it's like the idea that you. Take this and turn it into a comedy, and then it doesn't have that whole dystopian. I mean, it is a dystopian, but it's a very clean dystopian. There's like no one there. There's like no. It's not like zombies. There's no bodies. There's like nobody, and it's empty. It's an empty world, and even that decision, even that creative decision, isn't brilliant in some way, because you don't have to like go over dead people or. Even stop and recognize them or look at them. They're just not there. And so what this whole world and this guy's talking to, I mean, there's, and the pop culture allusions are amazing. There is so much goodness in this show that I thought that the originality of it struck me as something like, and as I said in my review, something along the lines of Seinfeld, where it was the meanness in Seinfeld was so stark. Even though, to be honest, people didn't actually understand that it was a really mean show. They just thought it was funny, or they incorrectly assumed that the trope that it was a show about nothing. Right. And then I talked about The Simpsons and South Park. Those completely stood out in their time as like completely different from anything else and just amazing. And South Park with its craziness. I used The Thick of It in England and the spin-off, well, you know, the cousin, I guess, would be Veep here, but the originality of The Thick of It when it came out and what they were doing was kind of, it was kind of stunning in its own way. And then It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with that whole sort of lo-fi weirdness and craziness. And they were very fearless, as I wrote. And then The British Office, Curb Your Enthusiasm for cringe comedy, and then just throw in Louis as like I said, a whole cloth genius of Louis. And those are shows. That's five or six shows.
That's heady company there.
It's very heady company. And that's why I said I was a little bold in doing this so early. Yeah, I have a caveat in there that it could go whatever way it goes. But the point I was trying to make was, by mentioning those shows, was like when you saw those, whether you knew it at the time, something clicked in your brain that said, okay, this is different. Something about this there's a different take going on here. Than I've ever seen, because you see so many things that are just cookie cutter representations of the thing that came before it, and just the way that Miller and Lord shot the two first episodes is amazing. I mean, they could have gone so many other directions that would have been bad, I think, or predictable, and then they don't. And on top of that, Beauforte's like his amazing acting in this, and knowing when to like rein it in and not chew scenery is impressive. Hmm. So I'm so high on this show, and I hope everybody tunes in on Sunday. Right.
Sunday night on Fox.
Yes,
check it out. I like on the your reviews, the way the Hollywood Reporter website is set up. There's a bottom line, air date, creative writer, director, executive producer, and cast. Right. And I love it. Cast, Will Forte. Yep. There you go. There's your cast. That's good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
It's pretty amazing. And just it's so funny because as you and I well know, and people who follow me well know, I don't like a whole lot of stuff.
No.
And so, when I like it, it's generally something that is really great and it should be liked. You know, I there's plenty of things that I write that are, it's okay if you want to do that. You've got an hour to spare, go ahead. But generally, there's stuff that ends up, if I really like it, it's going to be on my end of the year list. And, or things that stand out when you don't think that they would stand out, like Fresh Off the Boat. I mean, people were not really on that bandwagon because there was just so much that could have gone wrong, and the guy who wrote the book was trashing it, and even though he still said he liked it, was all kinds of stuff. But when you actually sat and watched the show, it was really good. But as far as like genre busting, boy, Last Man on Earth is it's, as I said, a visual delight, and as far as acting goes, it's he does a great job, and I can just tell you that. If you just let it wash over you, you will have so many laughs where you think, yeah, okay, I would have done that, right? You know, like, of course, if there's nobody guarding the museums, yes, I would have taken some great paintings and just dragged them with me. Oh, God. See, I personally would have gone in and taken the Giants World Series flags all and the 49ers Super Bowl trophies. They would have all been in my bedroom, all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. You know? But if you can imagine what you would do, it gets done in this.
That's great. I'm looking forward to it. What about American Crime? We talked about this a little bit last week because it's from the 209, Modesto.
It is from the 209, and I lumped these two together. So it's American Crime and
Secrets and Lies.
So we'll get to those. But American Crime is probably the better of the two. It's certainly more ambitious, and it's probably going to be a little bit more not controversial, but it's a much more of a hot button show because it deals with race and the premise of an American Crime, and it's from the guy who wrote 12 Years a Slave, and there's a murder. It takes place in Modesto. It's a white couple. He's dead. She's clinging to life, and immediately. You know, the cops have got two Latino suspects and one African-American person that they think pulled the trigger. And then it just fans out from there. And it sort of engulfs everybody in multiple storylines over the course of 10 or 11 episodes. And it's ambitious to do that because it's really difficult to talk about race without falling into these tropes that we've seen, like the Crash tropes, where somebody has to be so completely dislikable. Of course he's a racist, and then let's hate them. And, you know, they don't – and this does do that a lot of the times, but it has a little bit more nuance than that. And the strong point is when it starts investigating each side of the mystery and the people. And the thing that surprised me the most is that the immediately impacted people are the four parents, and how their lives are great storylines. Not just because their son has been killed or that their daughter's on a ventilator and clinging to life. It's just we learn about them as people as opposed to their offspring, and so that's what keeps it kind of interesting as it blossoms out.
Hmm. With the I wonder about the title because although it's a catchy title, it sounds more like a mob story or something like that. And that sounds like that's not really what it is.
It is not. It's not the Modesto mob.
No,
it's not the 209 mob. No. But I think that they partly did that because it's going to be an anthology. So if it gets picked up,
they'll tell another story.
Tell another story, and if my hunches are correct, it will tell the story also filtered through, through race, as I think that's. And in this one is religion, and there's even gender issues in this one. But yeah, if it gets picked up for another 10 or 11, I think that it's definitely going to be a different crime. But I'm guessing it'd probably be using those lenses, definitely.
Hmm. Interesting. What about Secrets and Lies?
Well, Secrets and Lies is that's an Australian remake of an Australian series. Hmm. And so the American version, I didn't see the Australian, but I think it, from what I read, deviates pretty quickly from that one, which was only 6 episodes. And of course, we're going to supersize it and go 10. But it's interesting because it's basically Broadchurch. So in a lot of ways, it has to live up to Broadchurch, which is not easy to do. I mean, that first season of Broadchurch was pretty perfect on so many levels. So this is a 4-year-old boy is killed in a tight-knit community, and he's discovered by Ryan Philippe, who is the somebody who lives in that cul-de-sac. And of course, because he found the body, he becomes the immediate first suspect. And Juliette Lewis is the investigating detective, and she brings an interest. I think that later on, and I wrote this in my review, I think that later, I only saw 2 of the 10 episodes, but later on, I believe that we'll like her character, and it'll be an interesting character. And if this series does move on to a second season, I believe that Juliette Lewis will be the only returning character. And that's how they'll deal with that. So, but at the beginning, she's a little bit, I like her, but at the beginning, she's a little bit, they've overdone the kind of, they want her to be so no nonsense, like not a smile crosses her face at all. She's really good at what she does. She's a total hard ass. But what they've done, which I had kind of like, I was like, oh, guys, please let's not do this much more, is that they make her kind of menacing. So at some point, I only saw 2 episodes that they gave us. But at some point, I'm like, you know what, guys? She is actually the detective to solve the crime. She's not like a monster. So like they'll have her, like they'll cut the camera and she'll be like behind the – she'll be outside your door with her face, or the guy Ryan Philippe will be talking to somebody and he'll turn around and there she is with her stone face. I'm like, you know what? I get that she's a badass, but she's not a monster. So let's. Right. But they're trying to create her character where she'll be this total badass. Nothing's going to stop her from the investigation. But again, given the story, Secrets and Lies, this little cul-de-sac, this tight-knit community, starts to completely come unraveled by the police investigation and who did it and et cetera, et cetera. So I found the first 2 interesting, but probably not as interesting as American Crime. And I could be wrong about this, Jason. We'll check in on it later since they only allowed us to watch 2 episodes. But I think I've already figured out the killer.
Ah, interesting. So it's a little more, a little better than The Slap, though, is what you're saying.
Oh my God, The Slap. Thank you for bringing that back up again. I actually did mention The Slap in the review. Like, okay, you know, these limited series where they take a big swing, where they have all these casts, American Crime and Secrets and Lies, they have pretty famous people as in the leads. They've got pretty big casts. And obviously, The Slap did that too. The difference is that so I love the networks taking a swing at this, but the difference is The Slap is just a joke.
That would be the difference.
Such a joke. Yes.
We should mention some other stuff that's coming up, although you haven't reviewed it yet. Battle Creek, which has an interesting history, is coming up. Sunday, March 1st.
I think March 1st. I will have a review of that. It's just, if you want to peek behind the curtain and how the sausage gets made, I have not watched it yet.
Right.
I have the entire season in front of me. It was one of the first times that CBS has ever sent out an entire season.
Wow.
Of anything. And part of that was Vince Gilligan from Breaking Bad and Saul. Better Call Saul. It was his idea to send it out. But I haven't got to it because it's like, you know what? It's not really. I mean, it is his show, but it's not really his show.
He wrote the pilot. My understanding is, and it kicked around Hollywood for a long time, and they finally made it, but he wasn't going to run it. So they got David Shore, who did House, to run it instead. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's sort of, it's, you know, some Vince Gilligan DNA, but then the sensibility of David Shore, who's, House was good. So
oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I, as a showrunner, does really good work. I think having not watched that, this is the perfect armchair critic. but having seen cutdowns of it and listening to those guys, I'll watch anything that Vince Gilligan came up with. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's his idea. And to be honest, I think the reason that they sent so many episodes is that tonally it's all over the map.
Interesting.
And they and one or two apparently was not going to do it. In fact, I think they sent a letter to critics that I think that in the third or fourth episode, crazy stuff happens that doesn't fit the tone of the first two. Mm. So they just wanted people, I guess they're assuming that critics have all the time in the world. We would just sit down and watch the entire season. I mean, if you send me the entire season of Game of Thrones, I'm going to watch the entire season of that.
Right.
But not Battle Creek, which I have no idea on CBS. I'm not going to be like, oh my God.
Just reserve. Yes,
I don't have time for Justified and the Americans just and all these other shows. Yeah. but I will say this. That pilot kicked around town for a really long time, and it wasn't until Breaking Bad was a huge hit that everybody's like, okay, we'll take it. So,
oh, it's the magic touch now.
Might want to read it. Yeah.
All right. Well, so you got 13, right? That's a 13 episode series.
Yeah, they're sitting there. You want to come over and watch?
We marathon it. Battle Creek Marathon. Woo! Again, if you get all of Game of Thrones, I'm at your house within, like, how fast can I get there? I could be there within half an hour. But
exactly.
But for the Battle Creek Marathon.
Putting the tweet out, hey everybody, I got Battle Creek, and we want to like binge this? Let's do it.
We'll live tweet it.
Let's live tweet this. Let's binge it.
Yep.
Speaking of binging, by the way, we would be remiss in not mentioning that today, Friday, is the day that House of Cards Season 3 drops.
The House of Cards is out.
It's out.
And you already wrote about it.
Time ago.
And I think we already talked about it.
Yeah.
Long ago.
Meh. That's what it is. M-E-H.
I saw a bunch of people who said, you know, it's fine. But for the hype it gets, like it's one of TV's best dramas, it's really not.
It's really not, no.
But if you love House of Cards, then you aren't even going to be listening to this because you are just going to be binge-watching House of Cards.
Yeah, they're
gone.
Now. They're already out there watching it.
Yeah. They took the day off.
They did.
They're in their Netflix pajamas watching the House of Cards.
I know somebody, and she's in her Netflix pajamas right now watching.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think she's being disappointed, but she's... She's watching it.
Well, you know, bless her heart.
Yes.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Let's see. Broadchurch, you mentioned, has been airing in the UK, but the BBC America airing starts this coming week, right? Season 2.
It does. And I know that theoretically, like on paper, we would be previewing stuff that's coming.
Yeah.
But you know, not really. We just talk about whatever we want to talk about.
Are you gonna see that? Do you have episodes of that?
I do have. I have the first four episodes of that. Yes. And your follow up question to that would be what?
Have you watched them?
I don't have the tears for it.
Yeah,
Jason.
Oh man,
that's my problem. No, actually, it's been an onslaught of TV, as you can tell from all these reviews.
I'm drowning.
Multiple episodes of everything. So, I really do want to see it because, A, it was one of my favorite series from last year. And, B, because the second season is already airing in England right now, to get the feedback from people. They're not giving me spoilers via Twitter or anything, but they're like, oh, it's really disappointing. Or like another person's like, no, actually, it's actually really great. It's a good way that they moved on. And they took the idea and they moved it on in a way that we didn't think they could do it. And other people were like, oh, you're going to be so upset. And so, you know, I was just like, I'm going to put this off until I can focus. And I will be honest with you. I cry at everything. And so.
Yeah, you got to steel yourself a little bit.
Oh, my God. The first eight episodes of that was just like a.
That trailer. They did that trailer for season 2 of Broadchurch that was like a knife to the heart. Just the trailer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, oh, yeah, this show. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Floodgates, exactly. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, right. I forgot about this one. I'm sorry. Let me lay prone on my bed in a pile of tears. Puddle of tears.
Sure.
Frozen tears. Those are the only ones that would pile up.
That's right.
Right? Yeah.
Ice storm tears.
So, I you know, and again, it's kind of an interesting thing going. I mean, this is, for me, it's interesting as a critic going forward that I think we're going to see less and less. Unless there's some kind of reduction in the amount of content that we have on television, I think you're going to start seeing a real reduction in multiple season reviews, right?
Huh.
So like I at some point I stopped reviewing. I think I even stopped maybe done. I don't think I've done every season of Justified that's come out, but I've done every episode of, you know, I think I did every episode of The Sopranos and Breaking Bad and Mad Men. Hmm. But not everybody deserves it. Not every show deserves it. And you just, it's overwhelming. And, you know, you can't, you know, shows that are going to go, that are kind of filler, you know, like, you're not going to enter, like, be reviewing the 12th season of Grey's Anatomy. But usually I try to review shows that are in the zeitgeist and that people are going to want to talk about. But at some point you have to have, you're not going to have time for it. And honestly, I did have a discussion with my editor about whether we should even be reviewing House of Cards season 3, because I felt that season 2 was so disappointing and had gone downhill that what was, you know, did it have the right, I mean, did it earn the right to get a third season review? I don't know. I'm certainly not doing, even though I like the show, I'm not doing Bates Motel.
I guess the argument would be if something's really got enough buzz, but it's problematic. I read what was it? I saw an album review the other week, so new release, some music or other, and the review was the typical useless review where it was literally like everything this person has done is terrible, and now here's a new thing that's also terrible, and it's like can you add to the conversation if you didn't like it? Even if people are talking about it, if all you can say is, yeah, I still don't think it's that great, does that help? Even if it's a buzzy kind of show, wouldn't you be better off just writing a story saying, hey, it's coming back? If somebody who is not the TV critic, rather than having you kind of go, oh boy, I still don't like it. Because what does that add at that point? We all know the answer.
Exactly. And I fight that fight and usually win it most of the time. Right. Like, you know, I stopped, you know, I even stopped on Boardwalk Empire and Sons of Anarchy. I stopped doing those. My feeling was, okay, I will revisit you if you get your mojo back.
Right.
But that's, to me, that's the both the beauty and the hard edge of trying to make a living in this industry. Not me, of course, but the people who are actually making the shows, is if you go off the rails, forget it. There's just too much behind you, right? It's like a race. You slide off the course, you're done. People are going to pass you. We're on to something else, whether it's, you know, The Last Man on Earth or American Crime, which it won't be. But, you know, those kind of things. Maybe it'll be the next big thing. I certainly did the season 3 of The Americans because it kept its quality level up. I'm not sure that's true of everybody else. But Broadchurch is a thing where, you know, it just that one wasn't less about the quality and more about the fact that the world we live in right now is crammed with stuff.
Right. What about now on a lighter note?
Yes. You let's
put
go
your
light.
Put your tears away. CSI Cyber is coming.
Yeah. So Patricia Arquette goes from the Oscars to like a CBS procedural.
Yeah.
This is one of the ones that I farmed out for somebody else to review. And this is not going to surprise you. However, here's what I think would be great for our listeners. I think that you should tape it.
Oh, I'm on it.
Okay. Yeah. I think you should tape it and you should talk about it because I would love to see what the FBI's cybercrime division looks like in practice and whether you're going to be like, you know what? No, that did not. That is not even code.
Well, I've recovered from the pilot of Scorpion, which was ludicrous, and I'm ready for more. And this looks like a spectacularly terrible show, so I will check it out. The first episode is called Kidnapping 2.0. I'm looking forward to that. How they've rethought kidnapping for the 21st century.
2.0.
Well, the second episode is apparently titled all capital letters CMND:/crash. Which is not a thing. I know it looks like a computery thing. Not a thing. Not a thing that exists anywhere. CMND:/crash. Not a thing. But that's the second episode. I have a feeling I won't be watching the second episode of CSI Cyber. But I will watch.
I have a feeling that we're going to make you watch it. Because once you say not a thing, you have to watch that episode so you can tell us, here are all the things that were not a thing.
Oh my God.
Cyber division.
Okay, we will inaugurate the CSI Cyber Challenge this week. I will watch Kidnapping 2.0 and report back to you. about CSI Cyber.
I want to see
God help me.
I want to see the guy who was the head of Macworld. You.
Yep.
For so many years, decades.
Yep.
I want to see you take on
CSI Cyber.
And you know what? Your whole thing should be you should just outline a scenario and then say, not a thing.
I am disappointed that the show is not airing on Mondays because then they could call it Cyber Monday.
Cyber Monday. But it's also not a thing.
It's on Cyber Wednesday. Cyber is not a thing.
Cyber
is that not the word cyber is not a thing.
It's really not.
No, that was a thing in the 80s.
Yes.
The cyberpunk era.
But it also has a C in it, like C from the
I know.
CSI.
Yeah. That's what the C in CSI stands for, cyber. People don't know that. And the S stands for cyber too, but it's misspelled with an S. And I don't know what the I stands for.
Internet.
Yes. Cyber internet.
Cyber internet.
Cyber. That's what it is. So I will. Okay. I'll check it out and get back to you.
Please do.
Good.
And
God.
Let me just jump ahead because I know what the next thing you're going to say is, and I'm going to preempt it by saying, yes, I also farmed out a new series called Dig.
Yes, Dig.
Which airs on March 5th on USA.
Yes, that's Dig Thursdays.
I did that. It's a Da Vinci Code style conspiracy thriller. Lost me. From Homeland creator. Lost me. Gideon Raff and Heroes creator. Lost me. Jim Kring.
I don't know why you farmed that one out.
I have no idea. It's a good cast, though. Jason Isaacs is in there.
Yeah, he's
good. I love that guy.
And H.
David Costabile from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
How about that? He's in it. Richard E. Grant.
Richard E. Grant's great.
Lauren Ambrose.
Yep.
Remember all these people?
Lauren Ambrose. Yeah. Oh, the last time I saw her, she was in that awful Torchwood Miracle Day show, and she was totally chewing the scenery and was really bad.
I love how Metacritic has a note that says the quote event series, which is like what we. Limited series, event series, which will definitely conclude its story at the end of the season, has been extended to 10 episodes up from the originally planned 6. Do you know what worries me about that?
That they only have 6 episodes of story and they're going
right.
to stick it in 10 episodes?
Here comes four more hours of filler.
Yep.
But you know what? Go for it. It's just whatever. It's a Jerusalem-set murder mystery.
Good luck. I'm not watching that one.
You know, I'm not either. I got somebody
CSI
else.
CSI Cyber. Going. All right.
We're breaking in the new Cub reporter. No, Cub critic.
Now, before we go to the questions, because we got a couple of questions, I wanted to mention a news story I saw today that I thought was fascinating. Since we talked a lot about The Flash and how much you and I both like The Flash.
Yes, story, and how far I am behind on it, but go ahead.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm behind on that one, and I'm still trying to get caught up on Arrow, too, because I'm enjoying that. But Greg Berlanti, the mad genius behind The Flash and Arrow, has apparently now a third superhero series in development for the WB, in addition to the Supergirl series that he's doing for CBS. And this is apparently more characters from both The Flash and Arrow getting spun off into yet another show. I just wanted to, I mean, it's probably, you know, maybe a year away, but I think that's kind of cool and interesting that they've just decided to go all in on this superhero thing because it's working for them with Arrow and The Flash. So sure. And I don't know whether it's going to be a third show that's on all the time or whether they're going to do the Agent Carter thing and do something and drop it in between or what. But the WB has just decided, or not WB, the CW has embraced superheroes, and
yeah,
they're just going for it.
And for me, the two hats that I would wear in answering that question is, one, as somebody who's a strategist, I would say absolutely do that, because it's been so long since the CW has actually had a strategy.
Yeah,
that in my strategist hat, I would say, oh my god, yes,
we found a strategy,
and do 5 more,
yeah,
as soon as you can. And actually, I would say I would want to have a meeting with a person. I'm sure it's Les Moonves, who said, you know what? I know you were going to do this other one, but we're going to put that on CBS. Remember that? What is it again?
Supergirl.
Right. We talked about this briefly. Like, why would you put Supergirl on CBS when there's nothing that surrounds it? Right. But CBS.
CSI Cyber.
Yeah. Right?
The S stands for Supergirl. Like, that's what it is.
Supergirl Cyber.
Yeah.
Yeah, NCIS Supergirl. So it doesn't make any sense. Everybody wants in on the comic book genre. I would say it's smart. And then as critically, I would say Oh my God, yes. This is why I want them to do it, because whenever they do, they need to move away from the historical fiction where 16-year-old girls are trying to do, you know, Shakespeare. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Move away from historical fiction where really bad actresses do really bad acting in a really bad show that's supposed to be something based on Shakespeare or actual history. So anytime they move away from that genre, good. I would much rather have somebody in a hot super costume than in a corset.
Yeah, well, and you throw in that they've got Supernatural and the Hundred and Vampire Diaries and Jane the Virgin, and they've got a lot of interesting stuff going on there. So, and the thing I like about what Greg Berlanti and his people have done is, like, on Arrow, you know, they were laying the groundwork the entire previous year for The Flash. They kept they kept dropping in like little hints about, oh, they're building this particle accelerator. So they had the whole story. They had the guy cast. They laid the groundwork for a year before they put The Flash on the air. And I feel like this report that we're getting now, that they're going to do this in a potentially no pilot and they'll just put it to series, I get the sense that it's the same deal again, where they're basically going to lay the groundwork over the next, you know, half season or season. That leads to another show. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that it's all just kind of emerging from this world that they're building instead of it being like totally on the side, which I got to be honest is sort of how the Supergirl thing reads to me, which is we'll just do it over there. And I think you've got momentum over here. Just do it over here. This makes sense.
Yeah, it's sound strategy because you have the audience that is going to pick up the clues that you're laying down, like, oh, right. This is going to lead – this story arc on this show will lead into the introduction of these characters in this show later on. It's brilliantly done. I mean that's how you should do it. But what you've got is just, you know, somebody just blocked them basically and said – over at CBS and said, no, I'm gonna superhero block you and I'm going to take this one because, you know, all the kids are talking about it. So we're going to take it.
Yeah.
You know what the problem with that is, unless they have a companion piece to it or at least they guarantee it, you know – cushy time slot, it's gonna fail. I mean, maybe as an outlier it'll work, but I'm with you. Let's keep them all in the same family. Yeah.
And I like how they're pitching it as a spinoff of The Flash and Arrow, like characters from various shows will be, it's like, that's great. You got shows, they got audiences, you're all on sharing the network. Yeah, I think it's really smart. So I guess we'll see what they do there, but I'm intrigued by that they might roll another one out.
Well, and you know, it's funny. I just wanted to throw this in because every time we get a chance to actually talk about strategy, I'm always game for that. But, you know, when you went through the list of what the CW has now, and we talked about what a smart move it is to keep up the superhero genre, what I actually think that they need, now that we just talked about The Last Man on Earth, that what part of what makes The Last Man on Earth so good is that it's original, it's a fresh take, there's a certain amount of whimsy to it, the tone of it is, it makes you want to watch more instantly. I don't know how to describe it other than that, which is very much like Jane the Virgin. So if you could have somebody put yourself in a position where and I think they have the reputation now where they could do it, where get in business with people who have the kind of vision that did The Last Man on Earth and say, okay, look, here we've got Jane the Virgin. Why don't you give us something that's an hour long, that's fun and creative and hip, but has some heart to it and some whimsy. That's the next one. That's the next building block that they need to work on over at CW. So if I was them, that's what I would be doing.
I didn't even mention iZombie, which is coming too. So, I mean,
iZombie, which I have seen, I have seen iZombie. I do like iZombie, but I'm going to be on vacation and I'm farming that one out to somebody else.
All right. Well, we already know the answer, which is that you liked it.
So. I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. So CW, I can't believe it. If you told me a year ago that people would be excited about the CW, I would not have believed them.
Oh, no one's more shocked than I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I've got three notes from listeners for you. You ready?
Okay. Yes.
First one's Dean in the 707.
Yep.
In dishonor of the death of 2.5 men, which I'm happy to see dead, but I'll still have to see commercials for it in syndication. What are the shows that annoy you most, and which are the shows, well, I think Rain, you've already alluded to, that annoys you.
So bad,
and
yeah.
Which are the shows that sometimes surprise you that they're still around? The Big Bang Theory really annoys me because our family likes geek things and people always ask us, so do you love the Big Bang Theory? And we don't at all. My daughter is a computer programmer and loves comics and video games and says it's a nerd minstrel show. There's a big geek, there's a big geek debate about that, by the way. And occasionally I'm shocked to realize that 60 Minutes and America's Funniest Home Videos are still on the air. So you could combine that question and say, what is the most annoying, surprisingly long-lasting series?
What, can there only be one? I mean, that's...
No, so there's... Well, now that two... It's like Two and a Half Men has almost relinquished the crown now. So where does it go next?
I
can't believe this show is still on. It's
well,
really
how about The Bachelor? I'll go with that.
Oh,
I hate The Bachelor. Yeah, I don't know why that's possibly still
nice.
On. Maybe I'm just looking to look at the schedule here. Mike and Molly. I hate to say it. Never liked that show. She's great, but I just thought that was the most boneheaded and easy kind of humor.
Well, it hasn't premiered yet, so I can't say CSI Cyber.
No, you can't. But, you can't say that. But how about all the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? And that, they're on because people watch them, obviously. But
this is going to jeopardize my chance to be a producer on Sonda Rhimes' She-Hulk. But Grey's Anatomy.
No idea why it's still on.
I never really liked it, and now it's been on for 11 years, and I cannot believe it's still on. It feels like ER in the latter days, right?
Which
is like, wait, everybody, how could it still, but it's still on? Why is it?
Oh, God. I had a conversation with somebody at a party, which happens a lot when you TV critic, and they find out, and they're like, wow.
Hey, I watch TV.
Let me ask. Yeah. I actually don't mind. It's what I do. They're not bothering me by it. Yeah. But like, the person was like, so, like on ER, I'm like, I don't watch ER. And they're like, what? You're the TV critic. How could you not watch ER? I'm like, that thing's been on for 100 years.
There's nothing left there.
And they're like, well, I think, isn't that kind of like a dereliction of duties? And I'm like, well, here's what could happen. They could have repopulated the entire cast with aliens and been their third season of Alien ER, and I still would not have watched
it. It's called Dark Skies.
There's no Wiley. Hey, I'm a little fan of Dark Skies. I can watch that. I don't know. So I'm trying to think what other.
I don't know.
Law and Order. Maybe you go Law and Order.
I don't know.
Why is that on?
Special Victims Unit or whatever is still on.
Well, pick your poison. I mean, there's a ton of those.
Isn't that the only one left? Isn't SVU the only Law and Order left? Maybe Law and Order Cyber. Well, forget that.
You know what? Here's the one that's been on too long for me that absolutely has to die. The Slap.
Oh, The Slap. It's been on too long.
It's so fucking long.
It's crazy. We got our explicit tag. Well done.
Right?
About the Big Bang Theory, I hear a lot of nerdy people who think that the Big Bang Theory is really annoying, and I also know a lot of nerdy people who like it. And I'm one of the people who likes it. I think it's a well-done show. I think those characters have way more depth than you could ever expect. I think it's grown over time. I think by introducing all of the women characters about 3 years in, they saved it from being kind of stagnating and falling apart completely. Now I think it's maybe doing that again because they've run out of things to do even with the combinations of the women characters. But I thought the women gave it a lot more depth. And yeah, you know, they make some jokes at the expense of nerds, but I think it's more smart and about being a nerdy person than it is making fun of them. So I totally get why some geeky people don't like Big Bang Theory, but I actually really like it. I think it's good. I think it's a competently executed comedy. And if I was ever going to watch a comedy on CBS, that's the one. Because
I think it's, like I said,
I don't think it's groundbreaking in many ways, but it is a CBS broad sitcom that is pandering to me.
Right.
And, I can admit that it's pandering and still appreciate being pandered to. So
yes, because you were Shatner on the second grader. You were playing Shatner.
Exactly right. I was trying. Right. I was doing that trick, too, where you interlock your hands into kind of like a fist thing, and you try to pop an alien on the back. And the aliens would just go down when he did that little Shatner hit thing. And on the playground, nothing. Doesn't work. It's TV. It's a lie.
Dear Mrs. Snell.
Yeah.
Your son is a bully.
Continues to Shatner hit people on the playground.
he Shatner hits people.
Make him stop.
We see his future not as a leading editor in the computer industry, but as a thug.
Yes,
make it stop.
I hope they build starships, because unless he's a starship captain, he has
he's
no,
got
future.
No future. By the way, I got here. We're talking about shows you can't believe have been on the air to put a exclamation point on this guy's answer from the 707.
In the 707, yes. Yep.
Four words for you, my friend. Four words. America's funniest home videos.
Yeah, he said that. America's it went and then it came back. But yeah, it's if Dick Clark and Ed McMahon were still alive, they'd still be doing TV's bloopers and practical jokes too, because it's like cheap and easy. It's free money.
Do you have any idea what season it is?
I don't know, 30?
25.
Well, it did go off the air for a little while, so.
It did, right. They ran out of funny. Yeah.
But they're back now.
The Americans stopped being funny.
Loaded up with funny.
Yes.
Our good pal on Twitter, Mike Vogon Poetry in the 716, says, why are the masses attracted to dark and bleak in our TV shows? Would a show like Northern Exposure have failed if it debuted today? So asking about like the ascendancy of these darker kind of anti-hero shows versus something like Northern Exposure, which was super light and happy. It's funny you mentioned Northern Exposure, because I feel like Parks and Rec is a good example of a show that has a similar comedy, half-hour comedy instead of an hour-long dramedy, but a similar kind of vibe where it was just kind of sunny and funny and happy, and that was good.
Yes, exactly. I this subject has come up a number of times, and people are trying to say, is this related to the economy? Mm-hmm. Is it related to the decade we're in, the era, whatever the mood or the zeitgeist of our collective culture about, like, we're worried about the economy, we're going to mm-hmm. crash, or we're worried about the Russians, or terrorism. What is reflecting back, and how does that? But you know what? There, if you can make some. You can make some general statements about it, but if you look back on it, there is no consistent trend that says, yes, this part of the economy leads to this. Because look, I think the dramas are better when they're darker. I think it's harder to pull off like Jane the Virgin, for example.
Yeah, which is a great example of another show that I think is light, even with its murder tropes and things that it does with the soap opera stuff. It's light.
It's very hard to do. And Northern Exposure, I got to tell you, Northern Exposure was one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah.
And like that was really hard to do, because you have to be quirky and nice and sweet, and they have to be kind of a little bit of romance, and then there has to be some kind of, you have to have some setting, and that was being in Alaska, that makes it interesting where you can be outside and you can have these cool visuals. I think it's much easier to say, well, yeah, let's take that and let's make it Twin Peaks, right? We'll take the same outdoor setting and we'll just freak the shit out of you. That's so much easier to do. And you've got midgets and talking backwards.
And,
and then you do American Crime or you do, I don't want to say that because that's not in the same level as these, but like, so you do Breaking Bad. Or The Sopranos. I think darker, grittier dramas, when they're done right, they're better overall.
Also,
they're also easier to do.
We had 50 years of TV where every lead had to be a hero and squeaky clean, right?
Right.
I mean, we had from the dawn of time until like starting in maybe what, in like 80, 81, whenever Hill Street Blues came on the air. I mean, it took a long time for there to even be like a hint of flaws in heroes.
Absolutely.
And to get to today, I feel like so some of that I feel like is a reaction still to the fact that network TV was just so limited with the kinds of stories you could tell that, people are still creating dark, bleak shows because it even now, I don't know, even now it's starting to feel a little different. Like just having an anti-hero, just being dark is not enough. But 5 or 10 years ago, it was enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right that there was, that's a reaction to the sort of the white hat era of television. And then there were, look, when we had our police procedurals, they were all, they're all like kind of lovable detectives who, had a couple of shootouts where you saw the bullet graze off the corner of the building, but you didn't actually really get somebody like sawed in half or put through a wood chipper.
Right.
That era hadn't come yet. And so it was like everybody was just, there wasn't enough edge. And then we made some edge. But yeah, I think that I don't think there's a kickback to that. But for example, a show that just debuted or, you know, dropped on Amazon, which is Bosch.
Right.
And Bosch is a very competent detective series, but it's nothing that couldn't be on television, right? It's just like, I don't know why that's an Amazon show. I think Amazon needs to make itself stand out by not making quote unquote television. And to me, Bosch is a television show.
Right.
I could find that on CBS.
You mentioned last week the idea of the, what was it, Blue Sky TV. I mean, that's part of this too, is that I think if you watched USA.
Oh, yeah.
You
and
would,
TNT. Uh-huh.
And right. You would see shows that are not dark and bleak. I mean, they do some edgy stuff, but, you know, USA especially, that is a whole bunch of hour-long shows for a decade now, all of whom are just kind of, you know, like Monk is an example, right?
Yeah.
That's like the quintessential USA show was Monk, which is, yeah, it was a murder mystery. It was like Columbo, but it was, you know, funny and sunny and not, and light. And they've had a lot of shows like that. And so they're around. They're just, you know, if you're looking for the critical acclaim, you'll get some nods, but... You know, a lot of the most interesting stuff is happening on HBO or AMC, and it is edgier. But, you know, there's light stuff out there, too. I think Northern Exposure, a show like that, I actually think Northern Exposure would have had a chance to be just as successful today. Maybe not on a broadcast network, but on cable.
Sure.
I mean, exactly. That's a Blue Sky show, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Definitely. And you know what? I actually, we talked once about what shows you want redone and brought back. I would love to see that redone.
I agree.
Let's do that.
I love a quirky dramedy kind of thing about a small town with a bunch of little stories. And, you know, there was never any super heavy handed story arc kind of stuff in Northern Exposure.
No. I'll take that over Backstrom.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Right.
What about the slap, though, Tim?
I think now you're just baiting me.
Yeah, I am. I am. Well, you can get me with CSI Cyber.
All right.
I think we've reached the end. I think that's enough damage for 1 week.
We did some. We did some damage.
Yeah, we did.
I cannot wait until you watch CBS Cyber.
CSI Cyber on CBS. CBS is CSI Cyber. The C in CBS also stands for cyber, by
it
the
is
way.
Just
they all stand for cyber.
Alphabet of awfulness.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh God.
Well, that's next week.
Well, we have our work cut out for us.
We do.
Got stuff to watch.
Yeah, back in the TV mines now hard labor.
Back into the mines.
Yeah.
Close those drapes. Get to it.
That's
get down
right.
There.
That's right.
Fire in the hole.
No more fresh air for you.
Maybe it'll be wine in the hole.
No, that's exactly it. Here's your remote. Good luck, soldier.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. You can tweet to us at TVTM or Bastard Machine and Jay Snell. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can email us podcast@TVTalkMachine.com if you'd like us to read your questions on the show. And you can always find the show and all the back episodes at theincomparable.com/TVTM. Tim, pleasure as always.
As always, and we will reconvene next week and do this once again.
Once again, CSI Cyber.
Not a thing.
Not a thing.